This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We're back, and we still have some more playoffs to talk about. This is the NBA Team Podcast over here at placetobenation.com. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I had my buddy Norman Rockwell as one of my special guest co-hosts when we previewed the Western Conference playoffs. That is absolute gauntlet. So if you want to listen to that part of the playoff preview, go ahead. We put that one up yesterday, and now I am back with my partner in hoops, I guess you can call him, and that would be Adam Murray.
Yep, I'm back. More playoff, more excitement, more Brian Pillman voice.
Are you excited?
Oh, I'm totally excited. It's finally here.
What do you mean?
Playoffs.
No. What I was asking is, are you excited about the new Star Wars trailer and Batman Superman trailer?
Haven't we had enough superhero movies?
Yeah, but that's the beauty of superhero movies. You can put all the different people in the same mantle, and people will watch them anyway and love them.
Yeah, here's an idea. How about having an original idea?
Well, it is original if you put new faces in the same stories.
Let's reboot Spider-Man for the 50th time. People aren't sick of it. Oh, we love Spider-Man.
You better not.
He shoots things out of his hands.
Well, you better not tell that to Ben Moore, since now he has to promote Spider-Man since he's in the new Civil War movie that they're going to be having coming out under the Marvel universe instead of the Sony universe. You can thank the Sony hacking scandal for that one.
Yeah, that was, North Korea wants to know what Susie wants for lunch.
If there was an NBA GM hacking scandal, what would be the best email you think that would come out of it?
Well, haven't we really had a hacking scandal with the whole Donald Sterling thing?
Well, no, he's just...
Isn't that sort of just like, little leaks?
You know, with Sterling, that's more of like a violation of like girlfriend code, if you ask me. I mean, for that girl to just record the entire conversation, what he said was completely wrong, okay? I can't defend that, ever. But for his girlfriend to sit there, by the way, his really young, slutty girlfriend, I mean, serious, let's call a spade, to friggin' record hours of conversations coaxing him into saying things like how he doesn't want her hanging out with black people, I mean... I don't know. It felt like they were poking at Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, but it's just like, nobody felt bad because he went down. It's just sort of like the way, like, oh, that's kind of shouldn't have said those things, but kind of a little shady to go down just based upon an angry girlfriend who, didn't get her allowance for the week.
I think an email scandal in the NBA would be almost worse than Hollywood, because there's only one type of person that's even more sensitive than a celebrity, and that's an NBA star.
Well, you can't really have a scandal, because just look at, like, NBA players' tweets. They're all just, like, or their Instagram accounts. Mm-hmm. It's just all, like, what serious thought could they have into it? It's just going to be, do we bring the mascot out in the third quarter? Do we bring it out in the first quarter? When's the T-shirt toss? How's a T-shirt cannon? Has a T-shirt cannon been serviced lately?
I think there's juicier stuff than that. Like, I think the Danny Ferry thing, I think that conversation has occurred many, many times. They just got caught red-handed.
Or the Isaiah Thomas scandal in New York.
Mm-hmm.
With the whole, people in the back of his car and all of that stuff. That was, there's stuff that could happen, but, I can't really see, like, much going on in, like, Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, scandalous.
What's going on? The Packers are in the playoffs. Great.
Yeah. Get your pool ready. Get your brackets,
You want to do Quiznos or you want to do Subway? And then no replies. You want to talk about basketball now?
Yeah, it's a good time now as any.
You know what's sad? That's the second time I had to ask that question out of somebody for the NBA playoffs, which is, you know, I mean, so exciting. I mean, the regular season, I kind of treaded this the one before, but I'm going to be probably doing it a couple of times with you as well. The regular season, the home stretch was one of the wildest I've ever seen. Do you agree?
It was wild because there was just so many.
There was so much at stake.
That was like, you've never seen like, okay, first New Orleans has to beat San Antonio, which was crazy. But then San Antonio falls from the 2 to, like, what are they, the 6?
6.
Yeah, like, how did they fall so far? That's a huge drop.
Because there were 5 teams within a half game of one another, or 10.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the regular season's fun because it's like, okay, this kid has talent on this crappy team, and this team's developing. But it's just, like, the chaos of, you know, well, all the teams in the West bulked up and everybody traded for, you know, superstars to get into this race. Mm-hmm. And the East is just like, oh, it's,
yeah,
we can make it with 500.
Now, we'll the playoffs is the true, like, second season. In fact, a lot of people would call it the real season. Now, there are some people that say the first round for some of the bigwig teams, because of the fact that it's sort of elementary, that they're going to probably wind up eliminating their opponents in the first round, that it's not, like, a true, like, challenge. So people don't get as invested as they would do maybe going into the second round of the playoffs. I still think there is some kind of value to be had in a playoff series in the first round, even if a really great team sweeps another team, like, even mercilessly. Like, I still think there's some value there. There's still some things you can poke at, and or some nuggets that you can take out of there from both sides. And there's just a lot of interesting stuff that comes out of it. You know, we talked, you know, the Western Conference is already, you know, in the books for now. There's so much going on there. We kind of talked about it a little bit with New Orleans and trying to get into the playoffs, Oklahoma City being out. The Eastern Conference is the conference that we're going to be discussing here for our playoff preview on this side. And it was a little interesting because there was a little bit of movement that could have been had from the 3 spot down to the 5 spot. But the real intrigue, even though it might not signify anything, was those last 2 spots at the 7th and the 8th seed between 4 teams. And that was the Boston Celtics, the Brooklyn Nets, the Indiana Pacers, and the other one, there was one last one that was trying to sneak in there. Do you remember who it may have been? Was it Charlotte?
Charlotte and Miami.
Oh, and the Miami Heat. It's sad.
Those disappointing overachievers.
You know, it does feel – the Western Conference, the only team that was not in the playoffs that's in the playoffs this year is the New Orleans Pelicans. This year there's a few new ones, but I don't think that's the important part of it. The important part of it is that the top 2 teams, the teams that were in the Eastern Conference Finals back-to-back years, were the Miami Heat when LeBron James was there, the big 3, LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, and then the Indiana Pacers, you know, with David West, Paul George, Lance Stephenson, Roy Hibbert, and they battled it out in the top of the Eastern Conference for 2 straight years. The Heat came up victorious both times. Now it feels a little bit like a new beginning, and is it because the Heat and the Pacers are not involved in the playoffs this year, or do you think it's because, even though LeBron being in Cleveland is not something we haven't seen before, Derrick Rose playing for the Bulls is not something we're unfamiliar with, it feels a little fresher this year than in other years?
Yeah, it feels fresher because, well, I would say towards the race for the 8 seed, then all of a sudden became the 8 and the 7 seed. And, you know, you have Boston, completely exciting team now. Pacers, excitement when Paul George comes back. The Hornets, wow, can they save face? And it wasn't just the, like, you know, the same teams are on the top, the same teams are making it. You know, Brooklyn was like the only real unexciting team.
Oh, yes, in every way.
Yeah. So you have, you know, like, was anybody talking about Cleveland or Chicago or the Raptors? No, it's just like, oh, yeah, they're there. They're expected to make it. The excitement was, who's going to make it? You know, is the team with the heart going to win? Is the team with, you know, the more talent in, like, Miami, are they going to get in? Who's going to, you know, who's going to pull it off?
I think the intrigue this one for this case in the first round in the Eastern Conference is not just who's going to make it. It's how far can the top teams go? Because I think as I think the prevailing storyline, as we discussed all the matchups, you know, for the four that exist in the Eastern Conference, is that I think we see a lot of these elementary results. You know, and I, you know, we're not going to give them away. I mean, if we did that now, we wouldn't have a show to talk about. But it does feel like we're sort of holding out for the next round to see that's where the intrigue really kicks in. The Western Conference, it's all systems go. I mean, there's a lot of really good teams bumping heads with one another right out of the gate there. With the Eastern Conference, it kind of feels like they need to kind of get over that little dam before they hit the sea. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's just, you know, we know it's a four team race, or really a three team race in the East.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, we have to get rid of the five. You know, thanks for coming. We're glad you. It's a great story you made it, Milwaukee. We're happy to see you. But okay, now that you're out of the way, now we can talk seriously.
Yeah, we like to talk about three team races, but right now we still have an eight team race. You got to give everybody a shot, and it's not impossible for an eight seed to beat a one seed. I mean, my God, we've seen it about four or five times, maybe three times in the last 7 years, so it's not impossible. So, you know, everything is still, it's a clean slate, it's a new beginning. You know, if you want to give yourself a shot, if even if you're a lowly 7 or 8 seed in the Eastern Conference and you had a losing record going into the playoffs, hey, you still got a chance. Is it a Lloyd Christmas, you know, one in a million type of chance? Yes, but it's still a chance.
Yeah, that's all you need. All you need to do is just make it, and then anything could happen.
Yeah, it's the small victories, and getting into the playoffs is a small victory in some ways. Before we get going on the specific matchups, you know, they went to best of 7 in 2003. You know, they did best of 5 for a long time. In fact, it was best of 3 for a while. I remember when the Nets, when Michael Ray Richardson was there, and they upset the Sixers the year after they won the NBA championship in 84. That was actually a best of 3. You know, and a lot of people were upset that it took only 2 wins for, you know, a top team to get eliminated in the first round. So they expanded it to 5 games. And then about 20 years later, in 03, they changed it to best of 7. A lot of people complained that it was just because they wanted more dollars for ad revenue by expanding more games in the first round. Are you a fan of the best of 7 in the first round? Because it truly – I mean, I feel like the best of 7 truly measures – that the best team really wins out, barring injury.
It does, but for round one, it just seems like a cash grab because they pretty much said, you know, each game is worth $1 million to the you know, whoever's at home, mm-hmm. through concessions and sales and just game day receipts. So it's just, you know, before, was it Golden State, maybe, was it like 10 years ago now or something?
And that was in 07 when they beat them in 7 games, when they beat them in 6 games.
Though. Yeah, and it's just like, how many of these first round games really go 6 or 7 games?
Mm-hmm.
We really, and the fact they space them out so far.
Yes.
That's the problem. Like, I have no problem if it be 7 games where it's just like, you know, game one, 2 days later, 2 days later. No, but it's like game one, 5 days later.
I'll tell you where that started. That started with the expansion of cable. I mean, the like major expansion of the cable broadcasting for all of these games in about the 2000 era. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to give every single playoff game its own space. But in order to do that, they were going to be forced to have to spread out these games more and more to having 2 nights off instead of 1 night off between games in order to give themselves their own prime time space so that no game gets forgotten. And I think that was the main catalyst behind it. I specifically remember one time in 04 when the Spurs played the Lakers. Now, this was just basically, like you said, a cash grab by the network where they played game 2 on a Tuesday and then they didn't play game 3 until Sunday.
And it's just like, why? And it was just no rhyme or reason. Like, one series would be on game 6, the other one would be on game 4.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what are you trying to prove?
Well, also, there's so many series that some end in a sweep and then some end in 7 games. You know, so now it's not – in a best of 5, it's easier to keep them kind of compacted, you know, so that if you win in 3 games, you know, you're not as badly, like, it's not like you have so much rest compared to the team that has to go 5 games, because that's only a 2-game difference in an elimination scenario. Now, if you sweep it, say the, for an example, say the Grizzlies sweep the Blazers, and the Rockets go 7 games with the Mavericks. Well, the Grizzlies get a good, what, week off?
Yep.
Before they play. I think that happened with the Heat last year when they eliminated the then Charlotte Bobcats, but the Nets went 7 games with the Raptors, and I remember the Nets looked exhausted when they played game one in Miami. Exhausted.
Yeah, I think it's just sort of the downfall. Like, maybe the problem is just the conference we're covering. Mm-hmm. I mean, the East, yeah, you could cut down to 5. Nobody cares. But the West, like, well, every game in the West could go to 7.
Oh, I can't complain about it. Now, the first round last year with the West was amazing. I think all but one of them went 7 games, and one of them went 6 games and had a great buzzer-beating 3 to win the series. It was amazing. I don't know if they could do it again. But
it's just like the East has no excitement to it, and it's just, you know, get round one over with. Let's get the real teams in.
It's like office space, lack of flair.
Yeah.
Where's your flair? No, but we got to talk about these, and we're going to go in the order of the schedule by which the games are the games occur for those conferences. And the very first game of the NBA playoffs to ring in the postseason is going to be the 4-5 matchup in the Eastern Conference Saturday, 12:30 Eastern time on ESPN, and that will be the Toronto Raptors as the 4 seed versus the 5th-seeded Washington Wizards. Now, I want to ask Adam, is it a surprise that as we go into the postseason, that this is where these two teams wound up as seeds?
No, not really. I think it's sort of – I think for the Raptors' credit, I'm surprised they only fell really 1 game out of being the 3rd spot.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're gonna win the East. So they had to get the 4th at least. They can't fall below that, but, you know, the Wizards are just a dumpster fire.
Well, lately they have.
Well, since like All-Star break.
Yeah, that's the thing. The Raptors and the Wizards at one point in December, I think, were the 1 and 2 in the Eastern Conference. They were playing great. And they had gotten their feet wet. Now, the Raptors didn't win their playoff series. The Washington Wizards did, and then went 6 games with the Pacers in the second round. But at least they got their feet wet for both franchises. So a lot of people felt like, okay, this is the step forward for Washington and Toronto to kind of take over in the East if Cleveland and Chicago don't get enough traction. And it seemed to be going that way at the beginning of this regular season. And then Chicago started turning the corner a little bit. Cleveland definitely turned a corner by making some moves and LeBron getting some rest. And it just seemed like everything started going on with Toronto and Washington ever since then. Now, the Raptors still won the Atlantic Division because the Atlantic Division is terrible. But when it comes to the Wizards, it's a little weird because their record has been – I think the Raptors and the Wizards have combined for a losing record since like early February.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked by that. It's just
total loss of momentum.
They never, you know, Toronto have no assets to bulk up after the crazy trade deadline.
Well, it's not just that. It's because there's this perception that they're such a deep team, and they are. They have a good bench, but you know, it's almost like they were scared to tinker with the lineup because they really think they can do something with this one.
Think about it though. Do they really have a good bench? They have Lou Williams, mm-hmm. who you know, sixth man of the year candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Or we'll say finalist. I think everyone pretty much is either him or Isaiah.
It depends on your mileage on James Johnson and Patrick Patterson, because that's a big part of what makes their bench, quote-unquote, effective. The other thing is also that Gravis Vasquez is about as good of a backup point guard as you can have.
Oh, he's like the definition of a backup point guard. He's what you want, but they have no size. You know, you have Patrick Patterson.
Undersized power forward.
He's been forced in the starting lineup because Amir Johnson sort of been struggling all year. Tyler Hansborough hasn't, you know, he peaked when he first entered the league.
I think he peaked at North Carolina.
Yeah, you know, James Johnson's all you have because, you know, Lou Williams is tiny. He's what, 6 foot, maybe?
I think you make a good point with Johnson because, you know, this is more of a storyline that we're going to be following throughout the NBA postseason because you're going to hear a lot of these kind of like niche words. And the main ones that you hear a lot now are stretch four. The other one is obviously rim protector, which I think we're going to hear more about as the years go along. I don't see as many rim protectors in the playoffs this year as we're going to see in the future. But the other one is wing defender. It seems like every single team, at least elite teams, have a really good defensive small forward whose job it is to basically guard the best guy. James Johnson in that role is not a good fit.
No. James Johnson and then, you know.
And his crazy hair.
Landry Fields and his contract.
Landry Fields is a towel waiver. He's a towel waiver.
Yeah, so it's just like you can say, oh, their bench is good, but they don't have really much up front other than
you've never been a fan of Terrence Ross.
No. He's off and on. Is he a second or third year guy now?
He's a third year guy, but Ross does start. So I have to take that
by default.
Mm-hmm.
By default, but it was just like when they drafted him, it was like, well, he's basically the same guy as DeRozan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you move DeRozan to the two, and Terrence Ross is there. They're just, you know, they're two similar players.
Now, Kyle Lowry was in a contract year last year, and his shooting percentage was amazing. His three-point shooting percentage was amazing, and he got a nice contract out of it by re-signing with Toronto. He dipped down a little bit after a really hot start, but his numbers are still good. DeMar DeRozan, truth be told, has had a really good year. If you look at the numbers, he's had probably his best season yet as an NBA player. You know, the thing is, we didn't see the improvement out of Jonas Valanciunas. It's very, very small baby steps with him. And a lot of people wanted him to take that big step forward, and he just didn't. Terrence Ross, no improvement. Amir Johnson, he's kind of settled back a bit. It just doesn't seem like, outside of Lou Williams, who's a great six man, outside of that, it doesn't feel like anybody really got better.
No, the problem is, like, well, Jonas, he's developing, but he's still soft.
Mm-hmm.
And Amir Johnson peaked, so there's no rim protector for this team. And there's just no muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's, like, the Raptors is just like, okay, they've sort of peaked on what they can do. They're maxed out on their efficiency right now.
Now, in the beginning of the season, before the season began and we did our previews, my big question with Toronto was kind of the same question that I had with the Indiana Pacers before they started making their run in 2012, 2013, and they kind of turned into a really good defensive team. But people have to remember that before that happened, they were kind of like good at everything, jack of all trades type of a team when Danny Granger was there, and they decided that they were going to commit on the defensive end but sacrifice on the offensive end. What I wonder with Toronto is that they were sort of in the same situation. They were really good at everything last season but not great at one thing, and I wonder what Dwayne Casey was going to try to do with this team, because they were going to have to thrive in one category at the sacrifice of another. And they definitely did, because if you look at Toronto's numbers, offensively really good. I think the only offense, efficiency-wise, the only two that are better than Toronto in the Eastern Conference are Cleveland and Atlanta. Defensively, though, they went through a pitfall. I would not be afraid to call them below average on the defensive end. Probably the worst one in the Eastern Conference alongside – you could probably say the New Jersey Nets or the Brooklyn Nets. I almost did it again. The Wizards are sort of the opposite. You know, their defense is really good. Their field goal percentage is really good. But their offense is terrible. Terrible.
Which makes no sense.
Why not?
If you have Wall and Beal and Pierce and Martell Webster spotting up threes, they should have a very efficient team, right?
Well, they should be an efficient team at a slow pace, which they do play at. But for whatever reason, their offensive efficiency is bad. You know, their offensive efficiency overall is decent because the field goal percentage, they finished third. But 19th in points per game means you do not play quickly. They're one of the worst teams in the league at getting to the free throw line and making threes. Their bench is bad. I mean, I'm sorry. I love Garrett Temple, LSU guy. Their bench sucks.
Well, Sessions is a quality backup point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Otto Porter Jr. garbage.
Did you hear what Paul Pierce said? He said, I might have to punch Porter
in
the face.
I want to punch him to get him to play better.
Well, it's either that or being made fun of for not guarding Tony Snell. So, I mean, take your licks.
Well, it seems like this team was built for the playoffs. Because
mm-hmm.
look what they have up front. You got Gortat, Nene, Chris Humphreys, Drew Gooden, and DeJuan Blair. All big size guys who will not afraid to muscle you around.
And they also are high energy guys, you know, in certain pockets of minutes. You know, you can't ask them to be all in all the time for 40 minutes. But if you kind of rotate them in and out, especially Nene and Gortat, who are kind of their pillars inside, and you ask them to play a good 30 minutes, a good 25 minutes, they can provide that for you.
But it's just like with them, it's just like with coaching. It's just like, what are they doing?
Well, I think that's the storyline going into it in general. Do you think – I'll just ask it as a straight question. Do you think this is going to be almost a you're fired type of series between Randy Whitman and Dwayne Casey? They've had success, but people are disappointed and they want to see more.
I think Casey could stay. Whitman, I think, is at his edge, at his end.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose and the trades they've made and the signings they've made, and they don't really have much flexibility to do anything anymore. So I think it's just coaching, I think, is the biggest question mark for Washington right now.
It's weird with the Wizards and the Raptors because in terms of their kind of like their place in the Eastern Conference, they're almost exactly the same. You know, they're good, but they haven't proven that they're full potential just yet. You know, they're kind of in the same spot. In terms of style of play, they are complete opposites. So it's really going to come down to style of play, which superstar between, you know, John Wall with the Wizards and DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry with the Raptors, which one can really assert themselves, and how the role players do between, you know, the really dependable starters in Washington and the overall diversity on their bench in Toronto. I mean, what do you think is going to win out there?
I think it has to go with the experience in Washington. Like, to me, Washington has just been underachieving.
Mm-hmm.
As they're, you know, as good as they've been and sort of as they've muddled through the winter, they have more talent overall than Toronto does.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto, like, I don't want to say they're just a, you know, Rue Williams is going to shoot 17 shots, period, every game. If he goes 3 for 17, your Raptors are pretty much sunk.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's you're not going to get boards, you're not going to have defense because they're soft. And I think, you know, with Wall and Beal, that should just be enough to overpower them.
You know, Mike Fratello, about a month ago, said something really interesting while Toronto was on one of their kind of losing gaffes. And that was that he's one of the color guys for, you know, the Nets on the YES Network, and they were, you know, they were following the Nets when they were playing against the Raptors in the playoffs last year. And he felt like, and I never thought about it this way, but I think he might have been right, that the Raptors sort of maxed out last season and earlier this season, and they borderline overachieved. There's that word again.
And, oh, they did. They did overachieve.
And now they're sort of back to the mean, and this is what they really are.
Like, they can't get any – they're already at 100% efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't add anybody. This is what they've gotten. They, you know, credit to them for being and getting every little ounce of energy out of them, but this is all they can give.
And so you feel like they're sort of petering back to what they are as they are right now. So it's hard to be disappointed by a team that's basically doing their best as is. Whereas with Washington, I do feel like they've disappointed. I do feel like they could do better than they actually are.
Well, if you go back to our previews, we basically agreed Toronto is just a second-round team at their best. Mm-hmm. Like, they can't get to that upper echelon, And basically they sort of just said, you know, that's what we are. And they're playing as such. So, you know, it's just one of the things. It's like, do you keep going with that disappointment? Like, oh, they could totally turn it around. This is, they're finally going to do it. It's their time. They're going to turn it around. They've had a mediocre season. This is like Kansas in college. Okay, they've sort of disappointed, but they're going to turn on the tournament, and they're out.
But do you feel like it's a little – it kind of sucks a little bit? Some people would say it's fitting, but I think it kind of sucks that these two teams are going to wind up having to duke it out against one another instead of challenge themselves against a really good team like Chicago and Cleveland, where they really have to test their mettle. Now, look, eventually the winner of this series is going to have to probably play Atlanta. So you're going to get tested anyway. But it just sucks that they both have to – you know, this might be a shitty example. But you remember when Boise State played TCU and they were both undefeated in 2009? And I was like, well, that sucks because that proves nothing.
Yeah, but that's just the way the cards fall. Mm-hmm. That's the – you know, maybe you should not phoned it in a couple games. Mm-hmm. Maybe you shouldn't have underachieved for so long. You know, with Toronto, they had some injury problems. Washington has an Otto Porter problem. You know, they both have, but that's just the way, you know, you have to, these are the cards that were dealt to them. You have to play each other. Would I have liked to see them play different teams? But at least this way, we know one of the two is guaranteed to move on. If they, let's just say one had to play Washington, one had to play Chicago, one had to play Cleveland, I think we'd be like, oh, those are both easy losses for them. So this way somebody gets to move on? I don't know.
Would you be shocked if this does not go seven games?
No.
So you think this has potential to be like a 5 or 6 game series?
I think it could be a 6 game series. I think Washington has too much. They could close it out easily.
Yeah, but they got to get one of those wins in Toronto. Now, Toronto does have a tendency to lose game one at home, so we're going to know very, very early what the storyline of this is. Because remember, there was that game against the Nets where Pierce hit some jump shots, and they took control of the series in a way, even though Toronto did get the series lead back, and then it went to a seventh game, and they lost again in Toronto. That was a bit of a heartbreaker there. And then they lost, I think it was also against the Nets back when Jason Kidd was there. They lost game one there, and they wound up getting eliminated. So, I think that's the most fascinating of the series, but I don't think we should lose steam yet on these previews because we still have a couple more playoff series to talk about. The next one on Saturday that's going to be played, that's going to be 7 o'clock Eastern also on ESPN, and that is the Milwaukee Bucks as the sixth seed. A bit of a surprise if you're like, say you flash from like October to now and you hear the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs, you're like, huh? Like, you know, it just kind of shocks you. They're going to be playing the third seed Chicago Bulls. First, I want to ask, is it weird that if you look at the statistics that we have a Tom Thibodeau coach team and they are not the best defensive squad on the floor?
No, because, you know, looking at the season, we have no clue what's going on there, but it seems like he let up on the team a bit. He's like, look, he's not the taskmaster that he was previous years. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a smart thing because, you know, everybody's a year older. Noah's got to be, what, like 30 now?
Noah is about, I think he's 28.
But, you know, he has mileage under him and Gasol is old and you can't push your team.
Now, Gasol's 35.
Yeah, Gasol's.
He led the league in double doubles, though, which is incredible.
Yeah, but that's not. That just shows a bad system in the Lakers more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Which I had said he was just a bad fit there towards the end, but although he's done, like, no, it was just a bad fit. But I think he just sort of put his foot off the gas a little bit. Be like, okay, guys, let's just give 90% now. And also, it's the same thing of statistics. How much can statistics really tell you?
Well, it tells you something in the regular season, but I think you have a good point there. That practicality going into the playoffs, it only measures so far. And then you reach your matchups against that one specific team, and everything gets flipped based on what the matchups dictate.
Yeah, and
like how? What does it matter how good you were against the 29 other teams? How good are you against this team? Because that's the team you're going to be playing against.
And that seems to be the thing. Was like last year, it would be, well, you need to play defense for, you know, all 40 minutes against Philly. You play Philly the same way you play San Antonio. Now it's just like, eh, you know, we know you're going to win. Just win. Don't, you know, don't break your necks, guys.
You know, we talked about, you know, how the East feels fresh. I think there's a bit of a new car smell to the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know if it's going to have the same long-lasting effect as it did with Memphis in 2011 when they eliminated the Spurs as an eighth seed, the Warriors with Baron Davis when they did almost the impossible against the Dallas Mavericks. I don't expect anything like that with this Milwaukee Bucks team, one of the youngest teams in the league. A lot of bright spots there going forward. Michael Carter-Williams, Giannis Antetokounmpo, John Henson, just to name a few of the guys that you're going to be seeing in the playoffs for the first time. So it's going to be fun to watch, but how much do you think they can really provide with Jason Kidd coaching the team for the second time in a row in the playoffs with a different team? What do you think that they'll be able to provide sort of as that new, fresh team that no one's really seen?
Well, all this is just the feel-good story of the year. Of this team is horrible. Everybody else is – you have, you know, storied franchises like the Knicks and the Lakers who are tanking and let's get rid of all everybody and we don't care. And you have this team who – do they really have any superstars on that team?
Yeah.
No.
And the Pucks raised their hand and said, yeah, we care.
Yeah, we're going to try. We're going to go out and play as hard as we can. And this is sort of a good – it's a feel-good story because it's the future of the NBA. You know, John Henson, he's a quality guy. Chris Middleton, people are very hot on him now. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even need to mention Giannis and Michael Carter-Williams. It's just like, well, and you know, it's a shame they don't have Jabari Parker, but it's sort of the future of the NBA will be okay because of teams like this.
Michael Carter-Williams won the Rookie of the Year. I think NBA fans will forever be torn about Michael Carter-Williams because, you know, he's got that arm length and he's got, you know, he can score triple doubles and he's a decent scorer even though he can't shoot the ball worth a crap. But, you know, he's fascinating as a point guard in a lot of ways. So it's going to be interesting to watch him in the playoffs for the first time. It's the other point guard in this playoff series for the Chicago Bulls that I think everyone's going to be staring down. The last time we saw Derrick Rose in a playoff game, I'll never forget it. You know, I was just doing housework, walking around. It was the very first game of the 2012 playoffs, and they were just destroying a mediocre Sixers team. He did a hop step late in the game. Down went his knee, and it's been all bad for Derrick Rose ever since. What do you kind of expect? What kind of feeling do you expect with Derrick Rose going into the playoffs? Do you think it's going to be kind of hunky-dory? Do you think there might be a little bit of trepidation? Do you think he's going to start shining in the playoffs now that he feels like he needs to avenge for the opportunities that he lost?
Well, I think it's going to be hunky-dory based upon the matchup. All they really need to do is just sort of switch him and put Jimmy Butler on Carter-Williams. And you think Chris Middleton is going to really do anything to stop him?
Averages 13 points a game as the leading scorer of the Bucks.
You know, it's this is like a not – again, this is just the nice, you know, thanks for coming, Milwaukee. Here's your couple million dollars for making it. Welcome to the club. We like your new logo. Looking very classy, guys.
You like the new logo, the kind of linear?
I'm a fan of it. I like what they have. I like the – their alternate logo with the Wisconsin, the Wisconsin, the state, and I'm a fan.
Yeah,
but that's again, if I'm talking how their new logo looks, I have no hope for this matchup. This is just like a warm up for Cleveland, basically.
I get the same feeling there too with the Bulls. I think this one goes about five.
Can they steal one? I don't even know if they can steal one.
Well, I don't think it's stealing one if they hold their home court in at least one of those games. At least one. Like, I don't think that's a steal. Like, I think the Bucks, at home could at least put up a fight where the game could be tight in the last 5 minutes, and they just make enough shots to win, and the Bulls kind of go into a crater on offense, which they do have a tendency to do late in games.
They do, but again, this is Thibodeau. I expect to see a different coach for the playoffs than I did for the regular season.
The other guy to watch, we already mentioned him, is Gasol. I think he had one of his best games ever in the regular season against the Milwaukee Bucks in the United Center, where he scored, I think it was, 46 points and, 18 rebounds, some kind of mammoth game. You know, if that is kind of a sign of what we can see, if Thibodeau finds, a major mismatch down low, then it might get really, really ugly for Milwaukee really quickly, where they lose by a bunch in the United Center.
Oh, yeah. Ilyasova's going to take off both guys, and then, you know, you have Mrotić back there, who's equally as capable, and no, it's just, you know, Chicago is built to destroy this team.
The two categories where the Bulls might have trouble is that their bench is not nearly as good as the Bucks, because even though the Bucks starters are not nearly as good as as Chicago's, the bench overall is better because they rely on them more, but steals, Bucks are one of the best in the league at takeaways. The Bulls are 29th in the league in steals. So their guards are not going to be as defensively aggressive as the Bucks are. So if they're able to turn over Rose and Butler, and you know they start feeding the ball inside because they don't feel like their guards can create enough, I think that might create an interesting scenario where the Bucks are able to create offense and the Bulls struggle a little bit. But I don't envision that happening. That's my problem with it.
Well, the Bucks have nothing to lose. They have no reason to not go out and try to get every little cheap basket they possibly can. Mm-hmm. So they're playing with house money right now.
And rebounding wise, the Bulls are so much better than them.
Exactly. So that's why, you know, it's I think it's just a miracle that this team, you know, Milwaukee made it to 500. Period. Mm-hmm. Where you said they're going to win 15 games.
Oh, I thought they were going to be awful.
So, you know, that's, again, they're not going to put up much of a fight. Will they steal a game? They could if, you know, O.J. Mayo gets hot and decides to, you know, shoot lights out for a quarter. But, you know, overall, it's a very easy Chicago win.
Yeah, a little pat on the back for the Milwaukee Bucks. Good job getting in, kid, but we need you to get to the dugout. Sunday. That's going to be the next round of Eastern Conference games. The first one up, 3 o'clock Eastern time on ABC, and that is the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're the new look Cleveland Cavaliers, who have not been to the playoffs since LeBron James played there last in 2010. They will be playing against Adam Murray's Boston Celtics, who he said would not make the playoffs. So it looks like you got a whole lot of humble pie to eat. Or are you just being a humble brag? Like, you knew that they would make it, but you just wanted to be a troll.
No, I didn't want to troll. It's just like the team, like, it's funny. I had an interview with Danny Ainge, and he just looked like the most depressed person in the world. They're like, "You made the playoffs, you're happy." He's like, "Yeah, we're making the playoffs. This year's draft, I don't think is that exciting, so I might trade my picks." And he just looked totally deflated because nobody expected this team to do anything. Like, you know, let's just, before we even mention Boston, who do you think Boston's best player is? Would it be Isaiah?
I think their best player, unbelievably, is Jared Sullinger.
Okay, you're still on the Sullinger train.
I think he's their best all-around player on offense and defense. I think he provides more minute to minute.
Okay, before the injury, before his fat foot got in the way.
Yeah, because I think his offensive efficiency is a little better than Thomas. You know, Thomas is, you know, a lot of people would kind of conventionally say Isaiah Thomas because he's the leading scorer. He does all these great things. The problem with Isaiah Thomas is that that's his part. That's the part he plays. You know, he comes in very quickly, he scores in a hurry, and then he's gone. You know, that's how you have to reserve his energy in order to keep him effective.
Oh, yeah, he's like Lou Williams.
If you extend him for 40 minutes, then you might be in some trouble and you start exposing him pretty badly. With Jared, you can play him 40 minutes.
Okay, so let's say, you know, in his prime, back when he was, you know, hitting buckets, what if you put him on the Cavs roster, what number would he be? The third best player, the eighth best player?
I think he'd be right behind Tristan Thompson, or maybe just ahead as like the fifth best player.
So you think Tristan's better than J.R. Smith and Mozgov? That's the problem.
Because now I'm thinking about the reserves that they got in the trade deadline. Let me think about this. LeBron, Love, Irving, J.R., Shumpert, well, you know what? Shumpert and Solinger are pretty close. Like, Shumpert offensively is decent, but not great. Defensively, he's good, but I think Jared Solinger has more potential on the offensive end than Shumpert can provide on the defensive end, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, but again, the crux of the argument is really your best player is battling to be the sixth or seventh best player on the other team. So that's like, no, I didn't want to be a sign of humble, but
that's
not
that's an applause for Brad Stevens.
That's just the thing is, I don't think anybody expected him to be as much of like a wizard as he is and expected this team of pure bench players.
Now, those smartest guy in the room type of people in college basketball will claim that they knew he was going to be a genius all along. But let me tell you something. There's a lot of guys that thought they were going to be geniuses who were previously assistants and good college coaches and went to the NBA and did nothing.
Well, there's the thing of being the genius and being the NBA genius, which is completely different. There is nothing really closely related to the NBA player as it is to the college player.
What sets apart Brad Stevens and a lot of the other college coaches that – a lot of those other college coaches were kind of hands-off, and they were even more hands-off in the NBA because they didn't want to shake the system out of fear of, you know, of disengaging their players or their players kind of turning on them, which happened a lot with guys like Rick Pitino and John Calipari. With Brad Stevens, not only do they have kind of the players with the right mindset, but he's so good at the X's and O's. He's so good at the particulars. He's so good at calling plays out of timeouts that the players have confidence in Stevens to call the right plays. And when there's that communication and it's successful, it breeds success. And I think that's what's going on in Boston right now.
Well, the thing with Boston is just like, I was just waiting for the bubble to burst.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I kept mentioning, well, they got back-to-back against Cleveland. You got two against Toronto. You got Pacers who are coming back. And, you know, in the end, they went, they won like 8 of 9 to close out. And it's just like, you know, and they went on like another 8-game winning streak before that.
They had that great game where it looked like they were dead against the Toronto Raptors. Somehow won the game. I don't know how they won the game. That was when Marcus Smart was the basket.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the final one with Jay Crowder hitting that fadeaway foot on the line to win. But it's just like you're having all these unsung heroes. It's just like, well, okay, at some point the bubble's got to burst because you don't have the talent. You don't have the talent, and you're facing teams who are good. And it's just they kept just somehow willing these victories. And I was just waiting for the schedule to eventually take them over, and it never happened.
Do you see a situation, and we've seen this before in the playoffs, where you know teams race to the finish line in order to get to the playoffs. They get there, but they're so pooped out that once they play against an elite team, they just don't have anything left, and they wilter.
No, it's not they don't have anything left. They will go out and give just as much energy. It's just they don't have talent.
I think some of the key things with the Celtics, when you look at the stats, overall, they're pretty bad at a couple of things. Field goal percentage, blocks, they're like dead last. They have no rim protectors. Points allowed, awful, 24th. It's because they started out as like kind of a really good offensive team with Rondo and Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley. And it kind of changed when they traded Rondo and Jeff Green, and they sort of brought it back to the middle. And then free throws. They don't get to the free throw line a lot, which means they're not very aggressive in terms of attacking the rim. Their advantages is that they have a good bench. They don't turn the ball over a lot. And even though Rondo's gone, they're still high in the assist margin, which means they share the ball. But then you look at Cleveland on the offensive end, and things look really, really dire for Boston.
Exactly. It's just like, oh, maybe if LeBron gets kidnapped. Nope, they still got Kyrie and Kevin Love. You know, there's no... It's just like the worst possible matchup for them to get is just the juggernaut team, who is just going to basically just toy with them, I think. They might steal a game, maybe. But I just... You know, you can like, oh, well, LeBron stats versus Boston. Yeah, that was literally LeBron versus Paul Pierce.
Well, I was gonna kind of allude to that. You know, it's a little bit of it's water under a very, very strong bridge. But, you know, you had LeBron, you know, he got eliminated by the Celtics on two different occasions. And when he was last with Cleveland, he was eliminated by the Boston Celtics in the TD Garden, took off the jersey as he ran off the rampway. And then a month later, he took his talents to South Beach. Obviously, he's exercised those demons twofold against the Celtics. He eliminated them, I think, twice, 2011 and 2012. So, you know, totally different team. It's like saying... You know, when Chicago would lose to the Bucks in the early 80s when Michael was young, and then the Bucks would play the Bulls in the playoffs years later, and it's like, oh yeah, the Bucks used to give Michael trouble in the 80s, and it's like, what the fuck has that got to do with anything?
It's like using Michael Jordan's statistics from the Bulls when he's playing on the Wizards. Mm-hmm. It's just like, no, that was a different era, and... You know, those games were epic with, you know, just Pierce and LeBron were just going, they were just basically going Dominique Bird on each other the whole entire time.
What phase is LeBron in? Is he in the fadeaway late 90s MJ phase? Or, I mean, he's obviously not in the Wizards phase yet. That's the twilight. What phase is LeBron in now?
I think he's past peak. Just by watching him and he's, you know, you can see some mileage on him.
Is it just because the headband's gone?
And his receding hairline?
Yeah, do you think it's kind of fooling you into thinking that he's getting older and he's slowing down? When he's actually not?
No, because he's decided to develop a post-up game, which obviously will slow you down. Mm-hmm. But,
I'll say this, his foot speed's a little off. You know, a little off, you know? And maybe it's because he's side-by-side with Kyrie Irving, one of the quickest guards I've ever seen off the
team. Yeah, that's the thing. And also... He is, you know, as the callback of the show is, how old is he now? He's 29?
I think he 30. Just reached 30.
But look at these high school kids now. We didn't have these numbers before. Perkins fell apart at 30, and all these guys are breaking apart because now he's 30, but he has 10, 11 years under him.
It's the early 30s, around 33, 34. That you start to see the cracks.
But that's the college guys that cracks. He was
I'm talking about the high school guys. I mean, the elite high school guys.
He has a lot of mileage under him.
Oh, for sure.
And he's been healthy for the most part, and it's slowing down. And his drop off is gonna probably slow considerably at some point.
You know, that's a great point. Maybe we'll explore this, you know, as we get along with the playoffs, because we're kind of predicting that Cleveland's journey is not over after the first round. With LeBron, you know, where did he get his surge this year? After he got the 10 or 11 game rest. He came in and pow, he was back to Superman. In the playoffs, maybe they'll be in a position in this early going where he can kind of take off a little bit, let Kyrie Irving take over, let Kevin Love share on the offense a little bit more like he's been complaining about in interviews. But in the playoffs, you really can't take breaks. And that might hurt LeBron down the stretch.
Down the stretch, yes. But again, this is more like like we said with Chicago, this is just a warm-up. This is a thanks for making it, Boston. This is a feel-good story. You guys tried to tank, but couldn't because you're too
smart. Your coach is too smart.
Yeah, your coach just refuses to buy into the tanking system and, you know, thanks for making it, but you'll be out in four.
Two notes before we get out of here. Number one, a lot of people made out uh, of the fact that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love are going to be playing in their first ever playoff series. Do you think we might see a little bit of jitters out of him? And if so, do you think Stevens will have some success defensively by hounding Irving on double teams with Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley?
Oh, yes. The playoff veterans of the Boston Celtics with the playoff veteran Brad Stevens and playoff veteran who the only one I think who has experience is
Bradley and Bass.
Gerald Wallace has the most experience, I think.
Gerald Wallace doesn't exist. Wallace is a ghost.
You're playing with guys who are just equally as nervous and just excited to be there. So, you know, if you're relying on, you know, really the glue guys of that team are Jay Crowder, Jerebko, and
Evan Turner.
Oh, yeah, Evan Turner has his great playoff experience last year in that meltdown of Indiana.
Yeah, Tyler Zeller had very good field goal percentage numbers, but God knows how good he'll be effectively against Mozgov and Kevin Love in the paint.
Exactly.
It'll be fun to watch at least for two games, and then in Boston, LeBron might kind of get a little bit of a flashback and say, okay, I want to take over this game. And then he goes for 40. But we don't know yet. The last point I want to make is that this is the only playoff matchup so far in which we have two new coaches that have never been to the playoffs before coaching against one another. Brad Stevens. And the other one we didn't mention at all is David Blatt with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
But they both have, you know, Stevens has Final Four. Blatt has EuroLeague experience. The thing is, like I said, they're both – so many players who they don't know how to be nervous because they're playing as other nervous people.
It's just nervous people against other nervous people. I think that's what the playoffs really is at the end of the day.
Yeah, unless you have that one savvy veteran team where it's like, okay, we know we're not phased. We don't care.
I don't know if we have a savvy veteran team in the next round, which is going to be the last Sunday game for the Eastern Conference, 5:30 Eastern time on TNT. And even though they had a great record with a 60-22 season, nobody scoring more than 30 points in any game. The only other two teams to do that were, I believe, the expansion era Charlotte Bobcats and the 2003 Denver Nuggets, one of the worst teams of all time. But this team was not completely god-awful, and that was the Atlanta Hawks, who were the number one overall seed, or the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, I apologize. And they're going to be playing the Brooklyn Nets, who snuck in on that 8th spot because the Pacers lost to the Memphis Grizzlies on the last game of the regular season.
Yeah, and Brooklyn, I don't even know if they're happy or sad, or they don't really care.
You know, I'm an optimistic man, Adam, when it comes to NBA, and especially when I do the research, and I try to look for the good things. I do. When I look at the Nets, and I look at the team categories, and I look at the efficiency, it all looks bad. All looks bad. I'm just going to say them all. Points per game, 23rd. Field goal percentage, 16th. Three-pointers made, 24th. Rebounds, 22nd. Steals, 24th. Blocks per game, 25th. So you think they're a good defense, right? No. Points allowed, 19th. Field goal percentage defense, 19th. They are just not good at anything. It's almost a miracle they made it.
They're just like a definition of just an uninspired team who had the talent to somehow do it. The only really, you know, positive side, I think, is they're like, well, at least we trade our first-round picks aren't that damaging right now. Mm-hmm. It's not like we traded a lottery pick for
to Atlanta. Oh, those are the Celtics picks still from that Pierce Garnett trade, right?
No, this is the Joe Johnson trade where they have the right to – where their Atlanta has the right to swap picks this year.
My God, that from 2010 or 11?
Yep. They're just swapping first rounders. That's it.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2012. So I can kind of see the remnants of that trade still coming back.
But, you know, it's like, you know, from Paul Pierce's interview, he's like, yeah, that team just didn't care. And, you know, we sort of allude to it once in a while. That was just something like they were like an NBA 2K team for your video games. Like, oh, man, I'm going to assemble this team. They'll play together because they're all professionals. It's just like, well, they didn't care. They said there's no heart in that team.
But you know why they did make the playoffs? Because one guy decided he really wanted to care, and that was Brook Lopez. He played great. I don't know how his season stats measured out because he struggled early. He even got benched by Lionel Hollins, the head coach. But he finished really strong. I think he was player of the week twice, you know, in the Eastern Conference. And he was terrific. I almost want to say he carried them into the playoffs. I don't want to go that far because he had a little bit of help. The irony with Brooklyn is that when they got together and they moved to Brooklyn from New Jersey, the triumvirate there that they liked, that they decided on when they couldn't get Dwight Howard or any other big names, is that it was Deron Williams, Joe Johnson, and Brook Lopez. And they went 7 games with the Bulls and they lost. Then they made those additions for Pierce and Garnett. Well, Pierce and Garnett are gone now, and it's back to Lopez, Williams, and Johnson.
Yeah. And that's what it's going to be next year, too.
Well, that's the contract. That's the contract talking there.
Well, there's two things. Number one, under Lionel Hollins, who hasn't been benched in that team? Everybody's been benched. That, you know, he has just been, like, just, I don't know, the team, like I sort of said, he's just like, I'm collecting a paycheck. You guys want to go out and play? It's cool.
I think he's high on Mason Plumlee and Bojan Bogdanovic. They've got more minutes than I expected.
I was high on Bogdanovic, but he sort of fell back to earth. Because I was, you know, just the beginning of the season, it was like, well, he was just lighting up the Euros for before the season. It's just like, you know, he's going to provide a spark. And I was like, he's going to take over Kirilenko, and he'll be the, you know, starting forward by the end. And he just sort of crapped out. And the thing with Brook Lopez was he's healthy. Mm-hmm. When was the last time he's been healthy?
It may be because he grew out the afro a little bit more. Maybe it's like what are those called? Chia pets? When you grow, it strengthens. Is that how a chia pet works?
I don't know because I'm not six. Oh man, I want a chia pet. Those are awesome. I see the commercials on my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoons. Buy me one. What does it do? I don't know. I sit in the corner.
No, but he sprouted out the carrot top hair, but he has been playing great. I can't lie.
He's been playing good, but it's just the team, you know, Beer said there was no leadership on that team, and you're like, yeah, well, he's not wrong with that one.
Lionel Hollins pulled off quite a coup in 2011 when Memphis was an 18 and they beat the San Antonio Spurs. Is there any inkling of a shadow of a hint of a possibility that the Nets can pull this off against the Hawks?
Yes and no. If somebody in Atlanta gets injured, anyone.
Well, that already happened with Tabo Cephalosha.
He's not a starter.
Mm.
If one of the four, we're not saying Damari Carroll's a player. You know, he's the fifth guy, and he knows he's the fifth guy. If one of those four go down, that might change things because, you know, Atlanta's on fire just based on their chemistry alone. You disrupt that with the bench is suspect. That's the one sort of weakness I would say with Atlanta is the bench.
I'll give you a second one, but keep going.
I think they could, you know, I'm just trying to find, like you said, that happy place that, you know, I'm like, you're like, oh, give me, you know, come on, give me this one way they possibly could win. Yeah. If, you know, T goes down maybe, but no, it's going to be a 4 or 5 game sweep like the rest of them.
You mentioned the bench for the Atlanta Hawks, even though a lot of people make out their great team play, it's really within their starting lineup where the team play and the team fusion is so effective and has made them so good. You make a good point there. Once you get down to that bench, I know Dennis Schroeder has had a good sophomore year as a player, but he's not great. Tabo Cephalosha is injured, but even before the injury, he was only decent on offense. He wasn't a great offensive player.
He wasn't doing
player.
Anything. And Paro Antic, we like.
Yeah, but he doesn't play a lot. And that's because of Horford and Millsap both being in the lineup, which kind of takes away his minutes.
That's the thing. Let's say Millsap goes down. Now you got to play Paro or Elton Brand a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
There's not, that's what I'm saying. That might change the dynamic a little bit.
And but, say, for example, Al Horford gets hurt and you have to play Mike Scott like you did last year in the playoffs.
Nobody wants to play Mike Scott.
He's a good player. You know, I think he's overrated offensively. I think people watch him shoot a lot of threes and they think that he's like this great stretch four when in fact he's just a good reserve and nothing more. You know, Kent Bazemore, he's Kent Bazemore. You know, he is what he is. But you make a point about the bench. The other one I wanted to mention, that's why I kind of stopped you for a second.
Let's not forget, you know, Mike Scott did kind of well managing Dunder Mifflin.
Do you have any idea how many times he's heard that joke?
I know, way too.
Like, but I think just, over and under is like 5,000.
You know, but this is just I'm just trying to find best case scenario for Brooklyn, but they got nothing. That's just the ownership, you know, hey guys, look, we did something. We still made the playoffs. We didn't suck completely.
But the one part where they have the weakness, and this is probably going to come back to haunt them in the later rounds, not necessarily in this one, because of the Nets being so kind of mediocre at everything, they are a very bad rebounding team. They're not very big inside. You know, they can't bully people. Like, I think if they played the Wizards, you know, kind of
wink. We've mentioned that. You are 100% correct.
Yeah, that would be where they might have some trouble. The game slows down. The one part, though, is that if you try to slow down the Hawks, it doesn't help much because their half-court offense is so good and efficient, and they're one of the best team defenses in the league. They're 8th in field goal percentage defense, and they're 4th in points allowed. So trying to slow down the Hawks doesn't help things. That's what makes them so effective.
Yep, and this is just a warm-up for the – you know, for the three best teams, they have little scrimmages.
Yeah, they were a one seed in 1993-94 season. That was the year that they actually, I think people totally forget about that team because they didn't get to the conference finals. But that was the year that Lenny Wilkins first got there, and they traded Dominique Wilkins for Danny Manning. You remember that? And yep. They brought in Stacey, and they still had Stacey Ogman, and they had Mookie Blaylock, and they got to the second round and they lost. We still got a long ways to go, but I don't think we're done yet with the Atlanta Hawks. I'd be very surprised if there's a 8-1 upset here. And we're going to go ahead and start kind of wrapping this up in a bow, and we're going to kind of just go through rapid fire with our predictions on the Eastern Conference, just in general. Adam, you go first. How do you see it with the East?
Wizards and then all the top seeds.
Next one.
Atlanta over Wizards, I guess. Cleveland over Chicago. Cleveland over Atlanta.
I've got the Hawks over the Wizards. I've got the Bulls over the Cavs. And I've got the Bulls over the Hawks.
Yeah, so it's really just, you know, with Toronto, Washington, Cleveland, and Chicago,
I hate to jump forward, but I think Cleveland-Chicago is going to be a war.
Well, that's going to be the only, I think, saving grace for Atlanta is they might have an easier matchup.
Because I'm looking at Washington. I'm looking at Vegas, and they're talking about, well, Cleveland's the favorite to win the title, and then I'm listening to other media types, and they're saying, well, who's gonna get in the way of the eventual Hawks-Cavs matchup? I'm like, dude, you got the Bulls and the Cavaliers right there. You know, and I know the Cavaliers had success against the Bulls in the regular season, but I hate to put too much pressure on the guy because he's got so much on his mind already. But Derrick Rose is such an X factor because you just don't know what he's going to provide.
Pretty much, and I don't even know if he knows what he can provide right now.
But if he provides something better than you expect, then, I mean, that might be enough to get him over the hump. You know, and
maybe.
And Tom Thibodeau is sort of coaching for his job. You would agree?
Yeah. So, although he shouldn't be.
Oh, I think it's completely unfair.
It's a shame he is, but you know, it's.
I don't think this is like a Mark Jackson situation when he was at Golden State. I feel like this is more of a situation like I'm trying to get a better example, kind of like Doc in Boston, where it's kind of like it's not you, it's me.
Yeah, kind of, but I think this is just, I want to say, more media-driven than really rumblings on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, whether the media hates him doesn't mean the ownership does.
Why would the media hate Tom Thibodeau? Because he grinds his players out?
Because they
He's salty.
Chicago just is just one of those teams where, well, why didn't we go undefeated? You know, the same thing with the New York media, and Boston media is pretty bad. Mm-hmm. It's just, that's just the way the city is.
Well, they can't all be as friendly and nice and wacky as the Milwaukee media, so I'm sorry. Or you could be the New Orleans media and our four beat writers.
Yeah, four beat. Yeah, come down to Bourbon Street. You know, we'll tell us what you want. We'll print it.
Did you read that tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski about the mandate that Dell Demps, that if they did not make the playoffs, Monty would be gone? I want to pass that question to you because, you know, we didn't talk about the West as much and we got a little bit of time. If Monty Williams loses that game to the Spurs, is he fired?
I could see them making a change.
So he's fired.
I could have seen it. Not just... Yeah, because it was a very attractive coaching job. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of like, look, man, we gave you a shot. You tried. It's just not working.
Very quick, give me the West. Give me your bracket for the West.
All right. Who's playing? Who doesn't matter? Golden State.
Are you being sarcastic, or do you not know the lineups?
No, I'm just going to say Golden State will just take it.
You think Golden State is going to run through with a 67 win record and all that stuff?
This is their year. Golden State over New Orleans. Golden State over.
Is it the 39-2 home record and the fact that no one can beat them?
That might be it. Like you think Memphis or?
I think Memphis can slow them down a tad. I still, you know, I picked them to lose in the first round, so I'm a bit of a flip flopper. Big shock, but I just can't count out the Spurs. I just can't.
Like, you can't count off the Spurs, but I have the Clippers over the Spurs, and the Clippers might give Golden State a run.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Clippers, we've talked about this forever. We know there's not as many rivalries in the NBA now as there should be, but man, the Clippers and the Warriors, they just do not like each other at all. And I can see that disdain spilling over and the Warriors losing their composure.
Yeah, possibly, but...
But they got one way to get there.
Exactly. We got like what, 5 more months of playoffs?
Well, with the TV schedule, we'd be lucky if we get 3. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
But before we get to all those months of playoffs, I think we did a good job of kind of narrowing down this one for everybody. Everybody, even though we're going to talk a little bit about the playoffs as we follow along in our following episodes, but I think you're going to be interested in the next one because we might be talking about teams that didn't make the playoffs and what they need to do and what kind of mistakes they made down the stretch. But that's on the other side. For this side, you're in the postseason. Congratulations. Now get to work. So, on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Enjoy the playoffs.